You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
What is a flame? The young boy, Alan, wondered. He asked his teacher. It's oxidation, she said. The answer dumbfounded him. A flame is indeed oxidation, a type of chemical reaction when something burns. But the word did not capture why the flame burns, yellow or orange, or anything else that Alan wanted to know about it. It's just giving it another name, he said. It might as well be Fred. 65 years later, Alan was asked the same question again. It's oxidation, actually, said Alan, laughing. Good morning and welcome to our service of worship. My name is John Eaton, a member of this church, and I welcome you here on behalf of the generations of Unitarians from South Australia and from all over the world, who have worshipped in this church for over 160 years, I think. We're getting on, you know. I would also like to acknowledge that the land that we meet on today is the traditional land of the Kaurna people and that we respect their spiritual relationship with their country. For this church is likewise a spiritual community, a church that supports you in seeking and following your own spiritual path, any path that encourages you to see more clearly, to love more abundantly, and to work towards a better world. Please join us after the service for coffee, tea, and conversation. And we can join now in the first hymn, Morning Has Broken.
Wonder. And these are adapted from the words of a travel advertisement promoting a tour of the seven wonders of the modern world by Aaron Miller. Wonder is nourishment for the soul. We may feel that we are the only animal on earth that can be moved to tears by a sunset, that marvels at the stars at night, that feels awe in the face of immensity and humility at the achievement of our past. The real magic of wonder is not the object of wonder, but in the fact that the more you look for wonder in the world, the more the wonder of the world becomes a part of you. Socrates said, "Wisdom begins in wonder." Studies show that the sense of wonder induces deeper levels of cognitive processing, boosts empathy, and helps us to connect with the world around us in meaningful ways. Art and science are inspired by it. Wonder is more than just a good feeling. It is a seed from which our greatest treasures grow. Wonder defines us as human beings. But we may wonder if it isn't the other way around, that human beings define wonder through their language, and in conceptualising what is wonderful, assume their ascendancy over the rest of creation, unmindful of the web that sustains all life, including theirs. We humans wonder in different ways. Some of us wonder at the natural beauty of an unspoilt landscape and may wish to preserve it. Others wonder at its potential as a tourist attraction or as real estate, and dream of its exploitation and the wealth to be gained. Birds, on the other hand, may choose to sing for a mate, to mark their territory, or to warn of a threat. and sometimes it's none of these. Simply using their most melodic song to express their joy at bathing in the light of glorious dawn or sunset, or simply the joy of being, and thereby transcend the need for such human abstract concepts as wonder.
The address about the nature of wonder, I must confess, is not founded on any particular qualifications or expertise on my part. Other than having spent much of my life in the classroom, where I've tried, not always successfully, to tap into the wellsprings of wonder and curiosity found in all students, motivated or unmotivated, and which is an essential part of lifelong learning and understanding. If my understanding of the concept of wonder and the words that keep it company are not quite your understanding of wonder, then I beg your forbearance. Words creak and groan from the contextual strain we sometimes put them under. So let's wonder about wonder, and we'll begin with a short story from Ireland, a cautionary tale about the importance of teachers tapping into children's natural sense of wonder as a precondition for any lifelong learning that will be both worthwhile and useful, and the loss that will be apparent should they fail. So Ireland, as you no doubt know, it's a land with a long and wonderful tradition of storytelling. And this little story emphasises the importance of wonder and the words that keep it company. Words such as legend, play, imagination, curiosity, inquiry, creativity, and innovation in our homes, churches, communities, schools, universities, and workplaces. In observing little children at play, we may remember back to the days of our own childhood and observe how little children cope with the massive influx of information they receive, encounters with new and strange places, peoples, things, and ideas by acting out these unique and unprecedented challenges in their play and their imagination and in their capacity to wonder why, to make sense of the world they find themselves in and as a rehearsal for life's future possibilities. I'm going to talk today about wonder with a capital W. I'm not talking about the banal, everyday garden variety of wonder, although I'll mention this. I'm talking about the circumstances that trigger the spiritual dimension of wonder, and we'll give it a really big W, like I've given it there. What about wonder? Well, that's one of my favourite photographs I took above Arkarula Village, and that filled me with wonder. So, what about wonder? The abstract noun, wonder with a capital W. Synonyms, if you like, awe-inspiring, amazing. Wonder may lead to a spiritual awakening. It may be inspired by a majestic view, such as this one, looking back south to where I used to teach. It may be also a profound religious or spiritual awakening or revelation from someone or some event in our life. But wonder may not always be prompted by the positives. We may wonder about the origins of evil and how it keeps on morphing into new forms. Now I look at the internet, which is so accessible and comes through our mobile phones. We can be connected virtually every hour of every day if we wanted to. And of course, I'm aware that I get all sorts of spam notices and that sort of thing. So that there is evil there. It's being used for pornography and other aspects of life that we might regard as evil or at least nefarious. It was the English linguist John Firth who observed that we know the meaning of words by the company they keep. Wonder, as the little Irish story has shown us, is kept company by curiosity, imagination, play, creativity, hope, and the search for truth and beauty in all its forms. Lord Russell once said that the whole problem with the world today is that fools and fanatics are so certain of themselves and wiser people full of doubts. Doubt is, or should be, fundamental to the human psyche. As Unitarians, this means that as far as our intellect is concerned, our default state should be leaning towards healthy cynicism rather than blind, unquestioning faith or belief. What happens when we no longer wonder? Can you imagine what would happen if we were completely wonderless? What would we be left with? Having worked out the answer and then having dismissed it all from our mind because we've got no need to inquire further. We don't have dread, do we? We're not left with dread. Wonder's logical opposite. Well, it's somewhere near the mark, isn't it? The absence of wonder in all its forms is therefore not its opposite, dread. No more than the absence of love leaves us with a residue of hate. Or being happy means that we're therefore sad. Most of the time, it may be that we're just in some sort of neutral state. So what I'm talking about today is the notion of wonder and also what it would be like to be wonderless and where that leads us, lacking any residue of curiosity now that we have the whole answer. In its most extreme form, we could say it's to be absolutely certain of something. I'm dealing with an abstract noun here and as I've said, words groan under the strain, really. Your understanding of words won't be quite the same as mine. We humans, being naturally curious, are programmed to want to explore beyond wonder, to aim for or to search for certainty, even if we never quite get there. It's a journey that may be momentary, transitory, or it may be a lifelong journey, and it's about decision making. It's also gradual. I'll call it the wonder-certainty continuum. There are many dimensions to it. Everyday and mundane experiences, such as driving our cars, or it can be extremely important. So if we're driving a car, then we would be using our experience to anticipate what other drivers are doing, to categorise them into whether they're good drivers or bad drivers, to understand, to predict what they're going to do, and to make a decision on how we're going to drive ourselves in relation to those other drivers. Conceptualising and categorising is the shorthand we adults use to predict what will happen when we make judgments in our day-to-day decision-making. We're somewhere on the wonder-certainty continuum many times a day. But what about the really big issues, life-changing decisions, beliefs, commitments? Well, there's a danger in certainty, especially if we feel that our search is over and we can now stop wondering. I'm not suggesting that certainty is wrong. We wouldn't be able to function without a degree of certainty in our day-to-day decision-making. We just need to exercise caution. That's all I'm saying. So the mental journey we make many times a day from wonder to certainty is all about anticipation and decision-making, making up our minds about something that leads to some action or resolution or commitment on our part. So when we wonder about bigger issues, such as what we believe, it may be just useful to ask ourselves, where am I on the wonder-certainty continuum? Are my certainties supported by facts rather than my paranoia, fears, influential people or feelings, reflexes even, or dare I say it, the social media? Are my certainties supported by established science rather than my prejudices and predispositions? Not pseudoscience, the bunkum science that masquerades on the internet as science, and the internet is full of it, particularly if there's money to be made. There's also some very good scientific information on the internet. Lord Russell once said that the whole problem with the world today is that fools and fanatics are so certain of themselves and wiser people so full of doubts. Doubt should be fundamental to the human psyche. As Unitarians, this means that as far as our intellect is concerned, our default state should be leaning towards healthy cynicism rather than blind, unreasoning faith or belief. And herein lies a conundrum. Even science is inherently uncertain. The uncertainty is founded in the science of particle physics. In other words, if we don't understand how the basic building blocks of matter really work, then everything else built upon matter is uncertain. The principle was first espoused by Werner Heisenberg. This doesn't mean to say that we shouldn't do science. It simply recognizes that scientists save the hardest bits until last. It's a work in progress and will be a journey as enduring as humanity itself. Good science will recognize its limitations. We'll measure the value of scientific hypotheses and theories in terms of the probability with which the results and outcomes can be reliably predicted, all other variables being equal. This means that scientists are never certain about any scientific conclusion to be drawn from an experiment conducted to test an hypothesis. Scientists simply measure the probability that other scientists working independently on the same research, using the same methodology and identifying all the relevant variables and controls, will get similar results. Replication, it's called. Certainty in an uncertain world is the wellspring of fundamentalism. And what about the extreme far end of the wonder-certainty continuum? Absolute certainty. Can we ever be absolutely certain about something? So certain that I'll stake my life on it. And then it's just a short step to more extreme forms of religious fundamentalism and the vulnerability of certain personalities to brainwashing and belief in conspiracy theories, indoctrination, which is seen in terrorism, which makes the headlines today. And there's also cultism such as doomsday cults, often centered on charismatic fundamentalist leaders such as Jim Jones and 914 followers who mass suicided in Guyana in 1978, although there is evidence that the cult's last moments saw quite a bit of coercion. And of course, you've only got to look at suicide bombers today. Certainty even unto death, and then that will mean that we will enter the kingdom of heaven. We now come to the phenomenon of secular fundamentalism. You do not need to be a religious fundamentalist to subscribe to conspiracy theories. There has always been secular fundamentalism, especially since the demise of traditional religions and the rise of secularism. Such skeptics may not necessarily be religious fundamentalists, but fundamentalists nevertheless. I'll call them secular fundamentalists. An example of secular fundamentalism can be seen in climate denial, and there are many still in denial. I wonder why. What do you notice about these climate deniers? What are some of the things that you can see? Do they have anything in common? Yes. What about some of you younger ones? What can you see that's in common with all of them? They're all old. They're all old, okay? So that's important. With perhaps one exception, I'll point him out there. But he's definitely in the background. He's on the fringe. So he may be a spy. So why are they all old people? Well, I suspect it's political in a way. I'm old myself, so I can speak like this. And of course, older people are naturally conservative. That plays a part. And they often can't keep up with the science that's going on. And so we have something that I call the inertia of belief. Once a belief is established firmly in the human psyche, it's hard to shift. And the older we get, the harder it gets to shift these beliefs. The internet, email, and social media allow us to select information that will reinforce our prejudices. And so today we have this polarization of belief that is so evident in communities and in our politics. I can talk to people being of conservationist mind. I can talk to people who are conservationists and perhaps not listen as well as I should to the people who are not. Secular fundamentalism will explain away scientific truths in the same way as religious fundamentalists, by denying the science, or at the very least, not being receptive to it, or implying conspiratorial intent on the part of our leaders, or play the trump card, as I call it, and call it fake science, or reports of global warming as fake news. So, in conclusion, we need to be aware of the mix of wonder and certainty in our own lives and where we are on the wonder-certainty continuum, and to embrace new as well as old wonders in all their forms as we happen across them. They are counted amongst the joys of living. And we also need to be self-critical whenever our certainties fly in the face of accepted science. Let's caution ourselves whenever our insecurities and fears tempt us to replace wonder with fundamentalist certainty. However, as a Unitarian, I can allow myself one exception to this rule. There are always exceptions. At the risk of this sounding perverse, let's all be fundamentalists in one sense only, our absolute certainty about the power of wonder in our lives, and especially that wonder which is love. So in this 2018 New Year, let you and I resolve to have a great New Year, wondering and loving. Amen. Let's remember in closing that words are only words. Concepts such as Alan's oxidation are only concepts, our shortcuts to understanding. It may be just as meaningful for birds to express wonder in a form that transcends words into birdsong. And I know which is the more beautiful. I think Louis Armstrong would agree, so we'll conclude today's service with the song made famous by Louis Armstrong, What a Wonderful World.
We hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.